Welcome to the City on a Hill podcast. City on a Hill is a Catholic young adult community located in the greater Kansas City area with a mission to inspire and form the young adult generation in their pursuit of sainthood. In each episode, we feature a young adult who will share their story of encountering Christ, some specific ways they are personally pursuing sainthood, and how they live on mission here in Kansas City. We are grateful you've decided to tap into our community and hope that you feel inspired on your personal pursuit of sainthood. Thanks for listening in, and here are your hosts.
Welcome back to another episode of the City on a Hill podcast, where we interview Catholic young adults in the Kansas City area and get their stories of faith. I'm happy to welcome on the show today, Esteban Rubio. Esteban, welcome.
Thanks, Father Madeline. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. And so we're gonna jump right in here. So I'll just give you the floor and tell us your story of faith.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about this when I was reading those messages when you sent me, and I was like, How am I going to structure this? Because it's always, all of, in your mind, there are all these disparate events, and you're like, How am I going to piece this thing together? But I was born in a Christian home, in an evangelical home. My parents were faithful Christians. That really was the beginning, or that's, the way I understood the faith. That's the way I received the faith in a Protestant evangelical home. I am, to kind of fast forward, and then I'm a convert, and I was received into the church 2 years ago. November 21st.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's gone quick.
So that would have been 2019?
2019.
Okay.
Yeah, I was received on like a Wednesday.
Wow.
I made my first confession. That Saturday, Bishop Johnston came and confirmed me.
Wow.
It was a week full of grace. So many sacraments, sacramental graces flowing.
I
should have started off with that, to give a background. But, I was born in a home where, prayer was the norm, church going was the norm. So, it wasn't like a pagan, complete unbeliever that was, received into the church, but there was already a seed of the faith, if you will, through my parents. My mother in particular has always been a faithful churchgoer and a praying woman, and a huge inspiration to me in my development. Even if I wasn't conscious of it, she's always been a model for me and an exemplar. Born in an evangelical home. And so kind of that worldview kind of colored a lot of my imagination when I thought about the Bible and really everything. Like I said, I wasn't, when you're raised in a Christian home, you're never, it's a process. It's a process by, by which, you receive the faith. You see these things practiced and they're modeled before you, but it takes kind of like an existential turning of your soul to God that I think it took a while for that to happen in my life, I guess. It was in high school, senior year in high school, that I had a profound conversion experience. I had a couple friends at the time that I had actually met through like a non-Christian setting, in a secular setting. They played music. I played music most of high school, like in bands, like in school and outside of school. And so music was a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And so I met these guys, in like a, secular setting, if you will. And I came to find out that they were Christians, devout Christians, kind of in that more charismatic stream. They were on the weekends, they were a part of this this college campus ministry called The Vision, which was this charismatic movement, and they would do open air preaching and evangelism and those things that are very characteristic of that movement, but it was very sincere. And these guys had a profound impact on me. And I think they were the first example of people that weren't my parents modeling the faith. People my age that, thought like me, look like me, kind of were in the same stage of life as me. And they made it possible for me to think through what it meant to be a Christian. at my age, and kind of the setting that I was in. And so I would say that was the profound, that was the turning point for me. So that would be my, if there was a singular event that I had to identify, that was, I think, the moment in high school where I really turned toward the Lord and I made a decision to follow him.
Did you sort of jump right in with these guys? I mean, were you doing open air preaching and stuff too?
No. Well, it is pretty, it is interesting. I was very zealous at the beginning, you know, when I was kind of like, becoming part of this community, I was excited at what God was doing, you know? And I had a profound sense that God had, called me to him. And in in many ways, because he called me to him, he was calling me to reject other things in my life. Yeah. So that kind of like, you know, I started like stop playing music as much. I stopped doing the things that I was like invested in. And like my life was really about this. I was really invested in this college ministry. Every weekend I would go. And so because they saw me, as someone who was consistent and participating in these events, like, you know, coming to these events, they would have all kinds of different things, not open air preaching all the time. They would do like worship nights and that kind of thing. Yeah. Just places where, you know, they're able to facilitate these groups, these meetings. Little by little, they did ask me if I wanted to, you know, like, cause they were trying to multiply and like move this onto different college campuses.
Yeah.
And this is in Houston, Texas. I should have clarified. So this isn't in Kansas City.
Yeah.
I've been in Kansas City for 8 years now. I did all of my high school in Texas. And so, they asked me to be a leader at one point and, you know, I actually ended up going to Bible school, and this is part of my story, when I wasn't able to really take that role up the way that they wanted me to back then. But I do think that moment was also important in that it like kindled something in me. Like, I don't want to be just a bystander. Yeah. Like, I want to be a part of what God's doing in my school and in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And so, although I didn't have the language for it then, I do think that's when God was calling me to a place of, you know, was calling me to a particular vocation, I guess, if you will. You
know? Yeah. So that was sort of the end of high school in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And then where'd you go after that?
So after Houston, I came here to Kansas City.
Okay.
This is kind of still in continuing that, that conversion experience that happened in high school. So senior year in high school into college, I did a semester at a community college, and this was a network of colleges that were connected with this ministry was a part of this network of colleges. And so senior year into the beginning of community college, I was a part of this group. And then I realized like, okay, how do I like stabilize this experience? You know? And so I realized like a lot of the guys that were a part of this group and that were leaders were all going to Bible school, you know, there's kind of like a, like, you know, D.L. Moody and like a lot of the like early evangelical kind of leaders, they all kind of started these Bible schools because they were trying to equip missionaries. You know what I mean? So Bible school was like a big thing, you know, if you wanted to be a missionary in that evangelical tradition, that was kind of the thing. Like, you got to be equipped for the ministry, you know?
Yeah.
And so at that time, the reason I came to Kansas City was like, well, there were other places that were options, but I figured Kansas City, I had some friends here already, that were a part of the Bible school, that was called, it's called Forerunner School of Ministry, which is the Bible school, which is an extension of the International House of Prayer, or it's the Bible school of the International House of Prayer. Mm-hmm. So, that's where I decided to go. I mean, it wasn't like extremely thought through. I just knew I needed to go somewhere to be equipped and to be able to sustain this kind of fire, you know? And I don't know, at that time there was like a real like sense of imminency, like God was doing something, you know? And so, I felt like in order to fulfill my calling and my vocation at that time meant to go to Bible school. And so that's how I came to Kansas City, long story short.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, it was kind of convoluted.
No, that's great. So So you come to KC to go to this Forerunner School of Ministry connected right. to IHOP.
Yes.
And that was, I guess, what would that have been? You said 8 years ago.
8 years ago now, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, walk us through kind of like what happened after that.
Yeah. So I came to Kansas City not knowing anyone. I sold, you know, everything I had. And this was, again, a kind of a continuation of my that kind of working of the Holy Spirit in me. I yeah. think that was like kind of moving me through this whole thing.
Yeah.
And I sold everything I had to come out here. I remember like I had records and t-shirts and I literally everything that I owned, I sold it. I was like, I'm going to Bible school and I'm getting out of Houston and like, I'm going to move forward with what God, I felt God was calling me to.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was always the end. Like I was so like committed to God's, calling on my life, or you know, I felt that pull, you know, but yeah. I didn't have a clear vision of what that looked like, yeah. you know, ultimately at the end, you know.
Yeah.
I was just like, I need to go to Bible school and I need to do something because God is active, right? Like that at that time, you know. And you know, and I'm still thinking through those things. But so I am a part of the Forerunner School of Ministry for 2 years.
Okay.
I do it for 2 years. And during that time it was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of studying and a lot of praying and a lot of thinking through a lot of the basic building blocks of the faith within that mm-hmm. tradition, right?
Yeah.
Within the charismatic kind of renewal worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And so that surfaced all sorts of questions for me, you know, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm coming fresh out of this like conversion
yeah.
mountain of Sinai experience and I'm coming down and I'm like, you know, again, I'm still a little kind of hazy on what the future might look like, but somehow I know that God's calling me here. So after those 2 years, having thought through certain theological, intellectual, and, you know, spiritual, existential kind of questions, like, what am I doing myself in my life? But also, like, what is the church? Who is Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
How do we doctrinally define the Trinity, like things that like to me were always, like I said, growing in a Christian home, were kind of in the background, never spelled out and articulated in a certain way. But it took going through these 2 years at Bible school to really begin to ask those questions.
Yeah.
And so after doing Bible school, I realized I wasn't going to stay at IHOP longer, you know, that really completed my time there. I felt at peace with my time. And I know people have mixed feelings about that, you know, the ministry there. And I'll speak for myself. I didn't have, you know, any sort of, it wasn't, you know, problematic or anything like this. I just think, you know, I was there for a particular season, helped me ask those questions in God's providence. I feel like, you know,
yeah.
it pushed me in the right directions to think through the right things, and maybe mm-hmm. indirectly, and maybe they weren't actually asking them, you know,
yeah.
In a particular way, but they kind of like indirectly kind of elicited some of those things like, oh yeah, what mm-hmm. what is the church? What are these things? What are the basic building blocks of the faith? And so after those 2 years, I finished Bible school, but I know I wasn't like ready to go back home to Houston because I didn't like, I knew if I went back home to Houston, I'd backslide into my old ways of in living. And it wasn't like I was living and consciously like choosing sin or anything like this. It's just distractions, you know, and I had laser beam focus at that time. And I knew that this is the direction where I needed to go.
Yeah.
And so I met some people, you know, that place is it's like an airport. Like you literally have people from all over the world there.
Yeah.
And people that, you know, with all interesting stories, you know, it isn't yeah. homogenous by any means.
Yeah.
So it was cool in that way that I met a lot of people through that, even though they weren't directly involved in the IHOP ministry or in the school, there was a lot of interesting people there that were, you know, embracing their faith and trying to live it in Kansas City. And so that was cool. So I met a couple guys and we moved out to the city. And it's kind of weird, you know, like Grandview, if you just move to Grandview, it feels like an enclosed kind of
yeah.
thing that is independent from Kansas City, but it's like, what, 15 minutes away,
yeah.
12 minutes away.
Yeah.
So it's not that far. So moving to the city was kind of but for me, you know, moving into the city was like, okay, this is like, we're leaving behind IHOP. Mm-hmm. We're doing something new. And, I knew at that time that I still wanted to fulfill my calling to teach and preach. that I had felt at the very beginning and those college ministry days. And so I was like, what does that look like? You know, still kind of hazy, not uncertain of what that practically, concretely looked like. And so we came, a couple buddies and I found a spot out here in Westport back in the day when it was like affordable to live out here. And we found a little spot and had a couple friends that were connected to a local evangelical church around here. And it was, it was a spot for me to kind of really think through what ministry on a practical local level looked like for me. So I was still pursuing the question of like, what is pastoral ministry and like that Protestant evangelical world look like? So sorry, I'm trying to condense this and it sounds like it's all over the place. But yeah, I went into that. I'm still in the Protestant world. You know, I go from that charismatic, more, you know, parachurch, big setting into a smaller setting. That's the point.
Yeah.
I meet a local community of evangelical Christians, believers here in Westport. And again, I kind of, in God's providence, a whole new set of questions emerged that I didn't know were there. And that led me to ask questions, not just about the church and the incarnation and the Trinity and these things that I felt like I had always implicitly affirmed.
Yeah.
But then thinking like, well, you know, who holds the authority to codify what the church is, you know, and what are, you know, and I'm reading some of the early, earliest Christians and thinking about the way they thought about the building blocks of the faith. And so at this point I'm taking that historical turn, you know, I'm going deep in history, like St. John Henry Newman said, and, I'm thinking through the faith with the early church fathers. And this is an undertaking I'm doing on my own while going to this local church.
Where did you, I'm just kind of curious, like where did you run across the fathers, just randomly online somewhere?
Well, I had, again, with being a part of IHOP and then being a part of all of these like larger Christian ministries, you just interact with people that are having similar questions. It was very practical. You know, and I don't mean to be critical, I guess, during this whole time, but I mean, like, a whole new set of questions emerge. It's sometimes they do come from a critical position. Like, why do we do this? Like, or why is this the kind of the dogma that we're going to stand on here, which to me doesn't, you know, doesn't seem like something the early Christians were very dogmatic about or even certain or clear about in any particular way.
Yeah.
You know, that could be a whole host of things. And so I'm like, I'm really like in trying to like understand my own vocation and preaching and teaching, like thinking through what I believe and not only what I believe, but wanting to be faithful to historic Orthodox Christianity. And so, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say is in all these periods of my life, new sets of questions emerge that caused me to reevaluate. Well, is at one point I thought this was Christian Orthodoxy, but maybe it's not. And this is Christian Orthodoxy. So I'm kind of, you know, confused in many ways at this point and feeling like I cannot fulfill my calling to preach and teach because I'm not sure if I agree with this statement of faith that this Protestant church had or, you know, what this statement of faith codified by this charismatic organization. And so that kind of confusion, it's just very practical, existential, you know, kind of confusion, thinking through like, what does it mean to be a Christian? What do you know? And what if Christians always held and believed at all times, you know, this kind of thing. So I'm going in that direction. At that point, I meet an Anglican priest, at a certain point in my time in this other, you know, Protestant church. And we build a really good relationship. And, the way I met this Anglican priest was through an older roommate I had. You know, Kansas City's small. Like, not only the Christian circle, like, you know, these Christian circles are big and interconnected, but, like, Kansas City is just so small. I mean, you go to a coffee shop and you see the same 5-6 people there, and then go get lunch and you see the same 5-6 people there. It's, like, crazy, which is cool. I mean, I do like that about Kansas. I like that about Kansas City. You can't hide in anonymity. There is, like, you're always kind of seen and known, which is cool. But So I met this Anglican priest through an old roommate that I had who was a Eastern Orthodox convert. I've shared this with you before. Yeah. He was a friend of mine who was also a Protestant, but converted to the Orthodox Church. So from afar, I'm seeing people also kind of have the same set of questions come. They're answering it in ways that I'm like, oh, you know, that resonates with me. I've thought through some of those things as well. And so, excuse me. So I begin a conversation with this Anglican priest who became a good friend and really was able to kind of guide me out of my confusion, I think, in a helpful way at that time, you know? And, you know, it's just some of the questions I was just kind of thinking through without going into detail. He helped me think through them in kind of his, at his church and under his guidance. And I ended up being received, confirmed in the Anglican Church and building a relationship with him. And, you know, the goal was still to teach and preach. The goal was ministry. And so at that time, you know, the church that I was at previously, you know, really wasn't requiring anyone go to seminary. They were really actually suspicious of those institutions. Like, you know, they're going to water down the faith. This is not, you know what I mean? This sort of thing. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I want, you know what I mean? I'm like my early 20s trying to figure out my life. Like I need to find a track to be able to be, you know, to teach and preach. Right. And so this Anglican priest gave me a kind of set out a track for me and helped me. And so at a certain point, I think, in my early 20s, I was on the track to be an Anglican priest for a while. And so I was at this church for almost 3.5 years, a total of 3.5 years, maybe 3 years. I did not become an Anglican priest. That's why I'm here today. And so after coming into the this church, you know, with my confusion, this Anglican church was really helpful at the time because it just helped me kind of bring in all the questions that I had. They weren't saying we have the answers necessarily. We just are thinking through the same questions you're thinking through about the history of the church, thinking about the consensus of the teachings of the primitive church, thinking about, you know, what it means to be committed to Christian orthodoxy. And not only that, what does worship look like? You know, because worship is intimately linked to these questions. It's not like I'm like, I want to know the right doctrine and have the right dogmatic belief about this or that because I just want to be right and want to prove everyone else wrong. You know what I mean? It wasn't like just like an apologetics thing. It was more like, you know, I want to be faithful to Christ. And so this Anglican church really helped me kind of see how that was. Those questions only made sense if they were linked to the liturgy and to the sacraments. And so within this, you know, within this setting, I was able to think in with the history of the church in a way, even with like, you know, so many divergent opinions within the Anglican church. And, you know, that's a whole different conversation I'm not trying to have. But for me, what it was just a place to think through these through my confusion. And this Anglican priest was a huge help for me. And me, you know, I think towards the end of it, towards the latter half of those 3 years, you know, I was leading a small group. I was leading morning and evening prayer. I was really, and at this, I should say, while I'm, you know, in this track to become a priest, I'm also finishing my undergrad at UMKC. I was studying philosophy. And so my, you know, when I finished my undergrad, it was supposed to coincide with, you know, eventually going to seminary, you know? But towards, you know, towards the end of those 3 years, I'm thinking through what it means to be a faithful Christian in this liturgical setting with the sacraments kind of being a part of my life in this. And then I'm in a secular setting at school too, asking new sorts of questions in a secular, you know, non-Christian setting. And little by little, I started to realize that I was thinking less, like, a faithful Protestant Anglican, you know, at that point. And I was thinking in line with a lot of, Catholic thinkers, you know, not just from the 20th century, but, you know, from the earliest centuries of the church.
Yeah.
And started to see how all these pieces were coming together in a way that I felt like weren't being reconciled in my immediate setting. And so, eventually that led me to take a backseat on, I had to have a conversation with the priest that was helping me at the time. And I was honest, I was like, about my confusion that I came in with and the confusion that I kind of ended. I ended my conversation with him and being like, there's still a lot of things I'm uncertain about, but I know the Lord's calling me to make a decision at that point. He was calling me to make a decision at that point, not only practically because, you know, school was ending and a whole track would unfold before me that I wasn't certain about again. Like, I was like, I don't feel confident I could be a minister in this setting because I was confused, you know? And so I really began to find not only spiritually, but, you know, intellectually in the best sense of the word, like answers. I felt like true answers. And I could mention some saints that I really think ought to be during this time and thinkers, you know, some were more academic and some were more spiritual, but I think St. Augustine was a big part of this, you know? And so I was reading the Confessions at this time, as well as St. John Henry Newman as an Anglican, also thinking through these questions, the practical kind of gritty questions of like, my life's unfolding before me. There's these opportunities here in the Church of England, but I have to follow through with my convictions and seeking the truth. And so the confusion wasn't like a non-productive, like confusion. When I say confusion, I mean like there was something pushing me to ask more and more. Yeah. And there was, you know, unless I followed that confusion through, I wouldn't get the clarity that I wanted. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but eventually I was received in the church. Yeah. November 21st.
Wow.
Yeah. And so here we are.
So did you just kind of like, as you made your way out of this Anglican church, you just sort of show up at a random Catholic church on Google Maps or something? And like, how did you,
I'm going to go there. Well, I had a good friend who was, a part of, old St. Pat's, the oratory, downtown. Him and his family were going there. He was also a convert. He came from a Lutheran background. Hmm. And so we had built a friendship and he helped guide me through a lot of these questions as well. And, at that time, you know, as an Anglican, I had a lot of these liturgical sensibilities and these, you know what I mean? And so I saw those really fulfilled and brought to their ultimate, you know, consummation in the old mass, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Anglicans have a lot of the ornament and they're, you know, I was a part of a higher church, you know, because there's kind of a gradation of kinds of churches in the Anglican world. I don't know if you're as familiar with that, but the church I was part of was a higher church kind of Anglican setting. So, my friend was a part of Old St. Pat's and, you know, they were, one of the few churches that celebrated the old mass at the time. And so, I emailed the priest there. I began a conversation with him and, he helped me a lot. He studied at Oxford. So he actually knew more about Anglicanism than I did. Actually, it's really fascinating, but you know who I'm talking about. He's just like knows about everything, like extremely well-read, amazing person, amazing priest. Was a kind friend along the journey. And so it wasn't a random choice. Yeah. I had friends there and, there was something about the liturgical aspect that really attracted me.
To that. Yeah, that's awesome. What was it like? You know, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Your background has passed through a lot of different phases. You know, like like just growing up evangelical, passing into a charismatic community, back into sort of a Protestant world, yeah. Anglican Church, Latin Mass.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm just kind of curious, like the day you came into the church, like what was it like experientially? Or
it was so liberating. It was extremely liberating because I think a lot of the time, maybe I had good intentions, you know, going to this church and being faithful for a couple of years, but then leaving with confusion, being frustrated with myself. So it was existential as well as intellectual, but I think there was a weight lifted when I was received into the church where I was like, I don't have to preoccupy myself with these. It's not to say that theology is not important or doctrine is not important or applying your mind or your intellect to matters of faith are not important. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is I felt a certain sense in which, you know, me as an individual person being the arbiter of all of these debates, I finally gave that up and said the Catholic Church is the arbiter of the faith, you know.
Yeah.
And it is simple. But I think there's something about that was relieving to me.
Yeah.
Because now by giving that up, you know, that kind of, you know, letting go of some of the attachments I had to some of those theological arguments and all of these things, you know. And I was young too at the time, so I'm always thinking through these things. Yeah. I'm always just like frustrated and confused and seeking clarity and I think, one of the defining things I remember about when I came into the church was this idea that, like, you know, I'm finally just surrendering on a lot of these things. And it was spiritual as much as it was material. Like, I was like, you know, I was like nailed before a priest. And like, I was just like, you know, reading the, I was making a profession of the Catholic faith. And in many ways renouncing a lot of these other things that at one time I believed. So it was very intense. And in many ways I wasn't conscious of everything that was happening, but I knew inside I felt I was liberated of a lot of, you know, frustrations and confusion.
Yeah.
You know? And so
No, thanks for sharing that.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think in talking to, you know, I'm not a convert myself, but in talking to a lot of converts, they'll have similar ways of describing entering the Catholic Church. It's like, you know, searching and searching and searching.
Yes.
And then finally I felt a kind of like stability.
Yes.
Like once I entered the church, there was, it was just sort of this security, like you said, of saying like, now I don't have to just constantly be going off of my own judgment, but I can trust that Jesus is with the church. And so I can trust her, you know?
Totally.
That's awesome. Well, I'd love to hear, Esteban, like, so that's a couple years ago, maybe.
Yeah, not very long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that you're kind of maybe focused on currently or have been recently and trying to just sort of grow in holiness and virtue.
Yeah. I guess I would say two things. Being a new Catholic and still trying to think like a Catholic, pray like a Catholic, and internalize the Catholic life. Because it's one thing to read the catechism and, you know, to read Catholic theology, moral theology, all of these things that, you know, I'm inclined to read and I enjoy reading and are helpful for me. But it's another thing to like, to embrace the spiritual practices and that thing. And so I guess one of the ways for me that I'm trying to internalize the faith is I've been going to daily Mass. I know that's very simple, but it's not something I've been used to my whole life. I didn't go to church every day. You know what I mean? And so to see Catholics, many pious, many devout Catholics go to Mass every day has always been something that's attracted me. And the Mass as a site of God's presence, you know, as a sort of not just external public ritual, but something very interior, something deep, something that nourished the saints, you know, in their spirituality. The Mass did, you know. And so that was kind of something I had to adjust my thinking to. And that's something that I've been trying to do is daily Mass. So I work, thankfully, with my new job, I work really close to Catholic Church. So I I almost always try to make a new Mass.
Yeah.
And follow and set that time aside as a time to really contemplate and not just be there and go through the motions, but really use that as a time to develop my interior life, if you will. So that's one practical way I would say that I'm trying to internalize, you know, my Catholic faith through this practice of daily being a daily communicant. And the other thing is, you know, being a part of my local parish. So I'm a part of St. Anthony. I'm a parishioner at St. Anthony's now.
Yeah.
And so that's where I live. I live down the street. And so there's some, that's always been something beautiful to me about the parochial model is that it's centered in a neighborhood and there's something integrated about the church in a neighborhood. And so that's a goal for me this year is to really, you know, I'm serving now and they have wonderful people serving at the church, but is how to revitalize the my local parish, but also the local parish as a sort of like social force in the world, you know, in the best sense of that word. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, I guess those would be two ways of which, you know, by which I'm practicing and practically thinking through the Catholic faith.
Yeah. No, that's really awesome. I think you point out something pretty interesting, and I love where you put that, like, helping a parish to become this kind of like social force in the world.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's true when you think about the parish historically, and even you talk to older Catholics, they'll often reminisce about sort of this like parish culture that maybe they grew up with where it's just sort of like, this is the community I'm a part of. Totally. Like, I'm not going to get along with everyone, but like, this is my family. And like,
this is like a paradigm shift for me, right? Yeah. Like, again, as someone who's from like a Protestant background where, you know, and I was guilty of this, you know, I was jumping from this church to that church. I'm going to be honest, you know, and it's, you know, there's a lot of factors to that, but this idea of like being in the same church with people that I have nothing in common with, but the Eucharist, like literally like we're there to just come to feed upon Christ. Like, this is to me mind blowing. Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is where the real gritty work of like, you know, social kind of coming together, but also like spiritual work, you know, of building a community.
Yeah.
Built upon Christ. And so that's something that that's a goal. You know, I'm not saying that I'm like the best at it, but I do think that's something that's worth giving your life for.
Yeah.
And it's very hidden, you know, it's very like, how many people are there faithful Catholic parishioners out there that nobody knows their name?
Like, yeah.
They're like faithfully serving. Like, this is to me like such a beautiful thing.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. I'm kind of curious too, actually. You mentioned daily Mass, you know, that's sort of a new thing coming from the Protestant world. I'm also really curious to hear maybe what your experience of confession has been like.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously something that converts talk about a lot too. They're like, that's super weird. Like telling my sins to another human, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, certainly. I wasn't prepared for that one. that was a huge part actually of, that was a huge part of my conversion was, you know, in relying on my private judgment to deal with doctrinal matters, I was also in my private judgment and within my own individual conscience trying to think through whether God loved me, God hated, you know, God hated me at this point, or, you know, his, you know, or God's mercy was upon me at this season of my life, you know, like I really thought through these things, you know, I was really tormented. I was a really tormented, I think we would say very over scrupulous kind of conscience. And so it was all kind of trapped within my own subjectivity, I think, a lot of the time. And so from the very beginning, one of the things that attracted me to the Catholic Church was the objectivity of God's grace in the sacrament of confession.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, when I was received, you know, to me, the sacrament of confession, of reconciliation, like I was running, you know, I was like, I'm ready. Like, yeah. I want to be there, you know, and by God's grace, I want to be able to make a good confession and follow through and make amends for my sins. And like, I want to externalize this. Yeah. Like, I want to do it. I want it to be something very concrete, you know. Now I don't want it to remain inside and torment me, you know, thinking through how this is not, I know it's not theologically correct, like, how does God feel about me today? Or how does, you know what I mean? But there, it's like, those are things that, you know, in your subconscious just kind of linger there. Like, and so it's been a very positive experience, I'll say. Think about the objectivity of God's grace in the sacrament of confession. This is something to me that makes complete sense.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. You mentioned in a lot of your stories, starting from like your conversion in high school up through, maybe it's still on your heart, but at least up until you entered the Catholic Church, this sense of like a call to like ministry and mission. And so I'm just curious now, as a Catholic of a couple years, like, how do you perceive, I guess, living on mission now? And is there something that you're kind of focused on at the moment?
Yeah. That's something I'm thinking through. 2 years in, I should be doing a better job. This is something that I'm thinking through with kind of what, in conjunction with what I was saying earlier, what does a parish mean as like a social force, you know? You know, a lot of the time when we did the open air preaching in high school, it was very much like, you know, if you have the conviction and you feel the presence of the Holy Spirit, go do your thing, go on mission, live your life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And run through the sinner's prayer with whoever comes up and follows through and has questions, and then bring them to the next worship gathering. You know what I mean? It was very informal, do it at your own pace according to, you know, what you feel the prompting of the Holy Spirit is at that time. Right. So this is my framework for mission. It's like just going out and like, there's nothing wrong with vocally, you know, preaching the gospel. I mean, that's the pattern. There's a pattern of that in the New Testament. Like, that's a very legitimate way of evangelizing.
Yeah.
But I had, now as I'm thinking through this in the Catholic Church, I'm thinking through it in a more holistic way. In the social dimension is one, you know, of what does it mean for the church to be in the world? What does it mean for the church to be in a presence in the world that is able to embody the gospel in new and creative ways that takes into consideration kind of the kind of the signs of the times, you know, where we're at right now, you know, what is the now word, what is it that the church has to say now? And so I think that's social, that's cultural, and so, yeah, I'm thinking through that. I think the parish model is a great model to begin, I think, for evangelization. But, you know, this is a conversation I'm interested in. This is a conversation I'm having with a lot of friends, Catholics, non-Catholics. And so at the interpersonal level, though, I think I've always been on mission. I will say that. I being at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, an undergrad student, I was in a secular, non-believing setting for a long time studying philosophy. You know, we're asking all the hard, difficult questions, and I'm asking those to myself. And you know, I was building relationships with a lot of the people that were with me, taking these classes, asking these questions. And on an interpersonal level, I always felt like, a sense of friendship, you know, building that sense of friendship and having those conversations was always the best starting point, you know, instead of, you know, before it was me coming from, you know, like all of us coming out of nowhere, you know, open air preaching, you know, probably, you know, very intense and maybe intimidating to some people, you know what I'm saying? So I'm coming from that model. Now I'm, you know, in the university, there's one way of building those relationships and being on mission and being able to think through some of these difficult questions with people that are non-believers or people that have left the faith. And then there's another dimension, which is to me like the church, you know, what is the church's presence in the world in evangelizing the world, you know? And it's like, that's a higher order kind of commitment question. And, and so I don't know if that kind of makes an idea. So that's kind of how I'm kind of thinking through it now instead of before. It's just like, pull yourself up from your bruised traps, show up, preach the gospel, whatever, you know, you're able to pull in that day, bring them, invite them to the worship gathering. Like, it was like, it felt like at some point, like we're just like we're filling our tally out for the day. But anyway, I mean, there was a lot of good that came from it, but now I'm thinking through those questions differently. And so,
no, that's interesting how you kind of like layered those different, I guess, ways of being on mission, you know, because, I think in general, probably Catholics could learn a lot from the more kind of risky, bold, in your face, like evangelization of a lot of Protestant circles. But at the same time, you know, if we do learn from that and take advantage of it, we have to also be cognizant of like what I think that second layer you kind of described, which is more of like a long-term, like friendship-based mission.
That's a good way of saying that.
And then like the communally based mission, like you said, more like a parish or like
higher order,
or even like a group of friends or a group of the faithful who are like connected, trying to like reach people in some way or something.
That third level, if you will, is kind of where I'm trying to think through now. Where I'm like, and I think the Catholic Church has so many resources to be able to kind of you know, strategize and move forward with evangelization in our modern world.
I think we got to make sure that we don't over strategize and just miss the opportunities that are right in front of us.
I guess maybe strategize is the wrong word, but
I get what you're saying. You know, as a strategist myself, I'm speaking mostly to what's dangerous for me. Sit and whiteboard all day and then miss the opportunity to talk to the cashier at the coffee shop, you know. This is a great conversation, Esteban, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Father Manley. It's truly been a pleasure.
Yeah.
And I hope I didn't trip over my words too much.
It was great. It was great.
Yeah.
And thank you all for listening to this episode of the City on a Hill podcast, and we hope you will join us next time. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the City on a Hill podcast. Consider subscribing so you don't miss another exciting episode, or leaving a review, which may help others find the podcast and be inspired on their pursuit of sainthood. Check out our website at kansascityonahill.org and consider joining us at one of our upcoming events. Be assured of our prayers for you and for all young adults in the Kansas City area. God bless.